Joshua chapter 14. Joshua chapter 14. Well, as we were pulling in tonight, my wife looks over and says to me, "I need a nap." Now, we just got here. And so if you're feeling like she's feeling, tonight's not going to help you too much because we're in the Old Testament. But, I mean, this is where we need to be, right? Yeah. This is exactly where we need to be. You know, you enjoy food, we enjoy being with our family, we enjoy the other things that we like to do. But let me tell you, the one thing we need more of is Jesus. And we need more of the Bible. And I need to be more like God. I need to know more about Him. And so it's good for us to be together. And I know you're tired, and I know, I'm tired. I saw a preacher the other day, I think he yawned during his own sermon. And I don't want to do that. But I tell you, we do need to make time for these things, be here for these things, encourage our kids to be here for these things, because, well, we need it. And I need it, and you need it. Because there are things we got to do, there are challenges we got to face, there are mountains we got to climb. And climbing a mountain's not fun. It's intimidating. It's hard. And yet we are, in a very real way, fighting spiritual challenges and battles that are going to require the kind of resolve that is going to cause you to say, "Hey, look, just give me this mountain. I'm going to tackle it." Tonight's lesson is from Joshua 14. It's the story of Caleb. We often think of Joshua as having the preeminence in that relationship, Joshua and Caleb. But tonight, I think, hopefully, in our excerpt from the life of Caleb, we'll be able to appreciate just the kind of man that he was, and then, like any good story, be inspired by it to go out and try to emulate the things that we need to emulate. I mean, that's the point of it, right? You watch a movie and you're moved by the message, and it's thought-provoking perhaps, or tugs at your heartstrings maybe. That's what these Bible stories are intended to do. They're here to teach us, to encourage us, and to help us, and to inspire us. And Caleb's life should do that. And it'll probably make you feel a little bit bad because you're not the man you thought you were. That's how it was for me when I studied it. And you just always realize, the more you're exposed to Bible characters and you look at yourself, you're like, "Man, I got some work to do." Especially with this guy, Caleb. And we'll talk about him a little more tonight. But at the outset, if you got your Bibles, keep your finger in Joshua 14. We'll be there in a minute. But let's go back to Numbers 14, where we're introduced to this character, where you remember the story of the 12 spies. God sending the spies into the land of Canaan as they're about to go take that promised land in what should be a very easy thing to accomplish. Verse 13, chapter 13, verse 2, "Send out for yourselves men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I'm going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, every one a leader among them." A leader, that's who they were going to select. And Caleb was just such a person, selected for his leadership, his ability. And so with the other men, he went out to spy the land for 40 days. And they come back at the end of 13 and proceeded to tell Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the sons of Israel and show them the fruit of the land. And you know how the story goes at the end of chapter 13. What should have been a great thing turned into a small disaster because of the doubt that arose on the voice of the majority of the spies. And the people cried out to God at the beginning of chapter 14. And it said that all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. And the people wept that night. Now, what would make you cry? I don't know if many of you are very emotional. I know some of you are. But for the rest of us, I mean, imagine, what would it take to make a whole congregation crying? I've got an idea. Uproot your family from where they'd been for generations, wander through the wilderness a bit, get on the doorstep of where you're going, and then find out you're going to die if you try to go in there. That was how they felt. They felt like, well, this has just been a mess. And here we are, finally, the culmination of this mess, and we're done with it. They grumbled in verse 2 against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. I mean, this is an intense scene. And you hear these people crying out against their leaders, and obviously there's a lot more people than there are leaders. And the voice of these people are affecting Moses and Aaron to where they're falling on their faces in the presence of the assembly. And here we're introduced to our character in verse 6. Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. So all right, here's two of the spies. They're tearing their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. That's a tough situation. You know the story, but then when you read it again, you're like, wow, this is intense. I mean, imagine all you guys trying to stone me with stones. That's hard to stand against these people and to say what needs to be said. But that's how this man Caleb was. God was proud of who Caleb was. And verse 22 of chapter 14, "Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who spurn me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it." I mean, this guy, I mean, for God to single you out like that is pretty special. But really, everybody should have had that same spirit and relationship with God that Caleb did. Caleb, and I'll say this 100 times tonight, Caleb doesn't represent anything different than you and I could become. We could become just like Caleb, or we could become like one of the 10 spies. Or we could become like none of those guys. I mean, from your perspective, God has given you the choice to choose between good and evil, between knowledge and ignorance, between righteousness and godlessness, and you can choose whatever you want to do. God will help you with that. And God tried to help Israel. You remember how God brought them out of Egypt and was like, "Hey, let's not go this way. Don't want you exposed to war. Philistines are a little intense. Let's not do that." God's bringing them along slowly with all these signs before he ever took them out of Egypt. What did he do? 10 plagues. We'll do these plagues and you can see it. Finally culminating with the fact that the most mighty person in the land, Pharaoh, sent them out of the country with gifts after having them be prisoners and slaves. All because God led them. God provided food for them. God provided water for them. God provided direction for them. Oh, there's the Red Sea thing. Where, I mean, this very sea opened and they walked over on dry land. I mean, that in and of itself is amazing to me. And just as a side note, I remember one time, it was years ago, we had a drought over in Alabama, and several of the lakes dried up. And I thought that was the most fun thing, to go out and explore the lakes, right? Because I'm sure there's dinosaur bones or whatever at the bottom. And so I'm running around there like a kid, and I'm running up where there's a little bit of water left, and I'm going to run, and I'm going to jump over the water. I don't know why, just a kid, right? You're going to run and jump over things. And I went to plant my feet to do a big jump, and my feet went all the way down in the bottom. I could barely get out. Like, I was like, somebody had to get a tree branch, and I was pulling myself out, lost my shoes, because it was so mucky and whatever. You think about the Red Sea. You got millions of people that the sea opens up, and they walk over on dry land. It was just like this, like pavement, like a road. Like, that's who God is. God is showing them all these wonderful things. God is trying to teach them to trust him. And here they get on the doorstep of Canaan, and the spies come back, and they're like, "Man, we're still not there. Don't think we can do this. Don't think we can make it. We're not going to be able to do it." And in spite of all those things, they fail. I mean, they're going to end up dying because of this. Oh, what a tragedy. And you look at that and you're like, how can these people be so silly? All these things God has shown them, taught them, given them, and yet they don't develop a saving faith in God. Yet, how many times does that happen today? Kids that grow up in the church, people that ought to know better, people exposed to the gospel, to the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus every day of their lives, godly parents, godly friends, all that stuff, they still don't come to know Jesus. That they don't accept. Why would that happen? Right, just like Israel. All right? Some people never develop a saving faith in God. And unfortunately, that's on you. There's no fault in God in any of this. Yet they tried to blame God, didn't they? They tried to say to God, well, why did you bring us out here in the wilderness to die? Oh, our children are going to suffer. They're going to be prey. Everything bad that we're dreaming up is going to happen. But it's nothing to do with God. God's like, I've led you every step of the way. And God was going to lead them. As a matter of fact, God said, your children are the ones that are going to inherit it. The ones you think that are going to be plunder and prey, they're the ones that are going to see it. But all you adults, every one of you are going to die. You're not going to see this land. Except, he singles out Caleb. He said, Caleb, this guy, verse 24, he has a different spirit. He has a different spirit. That's why I want to study Caleb tonight. He's just a little bit different. He's got a different spirit from God. And so what's going to happen is, this situation between Joshua and Caleb is going to play out over the rest of the 40 years. Everyone's going to die in the wilderness, and then we're going to get a take two where they're going back in to conquer the land of Canaan. And you know, as Moses passes over and he's not able to enter the land, Moses dies, he transitions the leadership over to Joshua. And so Joshua is going to lead the children of Israel into the capture of Canaan. And so we're introduced to all these great battles that are going to happen in Joshua as they're taking over the land and they're then doling out the inheritance. I found a map which is, I think it's just a picture of someone's Bible. I had this very map in the back of my Bible. But that's kind of what occurred as Joshua leads these people in. And the story that we're going to pick up later is going to be around this area of Hebron in the hill country of Judah. And we're going to study that because Caleb's going to say something cool about wanting to take over this land and want to take over this mountain later on. But we're introduced to it a little bit. They come through Jericho, obviously, and Ai, and they come around and they're attacking all these nations in the south. They're going to go back to Gilgal, head back up north. Of course, you remember some of the tribes stayed on the eastern side but still promised to help out. And then they go and take all the way up here. And Joshua gets all this stuff settled. And they take over the land of Canaan. And they develop these 12 tribes, and people take this as inheritance. And there's very specific rules for where these people are to live and to go. Of course, you don't see Levi up there because God is their portion and inheritance. They just got cities to live in, and they're going to be taken care of in other ways. But here are all these great tribes, and we see these people finally starting to settle into the land that God had given them. And yet, in spite of all these promises and the good things that God has given them, it doesn't always work out like you would imagine. Israel, and you can go ahead and turn back over to Joshua 14. We'll read some of that in a minute. Israel ran into a lot of difficulties, even in conquering the land. So it wasn't anything just as quite as anemic as they were on the outside of the land when they initially spied it out. They were able to come in and take it, but they still had a lot of difficulties. The spirit of people were not like Caleb even a generation later. Over in Judges chapter 1, some of the people in taking over the land, they would fight a little bit, but man, they'd run into trouble, and they were still afraid. You might remember Judges chapter 1, in verse 19, where it says, the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley, because they had iron chariots. Now, I don't think, as you can imagine, this means that God was unable to conquer the land, because literally the people had iron. Look, God made the iron. It's not that God... they couldn't do it with God. The point of the passage is, oh, they couldn't do it because they were afraid. I mean, these individuals were scared about what they found, and I guess it would be intimidating if you were a foot soldier to stand up to some iron chariots. But then again, when you got God on your side, you can do some miraculous things. And so they weren't able to take over the land, not because they couldn't, because God wouldn't allow it. They were just afraid. And these people continue to plague them later on as their weaknesses were exposed. Secondly, and later on in the same chapter, you know, they were able to take over large parts of the land, but some of the land, they just didn't take over. In Judges chapter 1, toward the end, the whole chapter's dedicated almost, it seems, to the failings of the places that they didn't take over. Chapter 1 and verse 27, Manasseh didn't take possession of Beth Shean and its villages, or Tanakh and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Iblim and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. So the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. They didn't do it completely. They were, well, I guess, there's a bit of laziness there. I know I joke with my kids all the time about, you know, not doing something halfway or cleaning up halfway. That's how Israel was. God said, clean out Canaan. And what did they do? They cleaned it out a little bit. Enough to carve a place for me and my people to live, my family, my flocks, my herds. But they didn't do it completely. And so the rest of that chapter lists kind of the laziness involved with them not capturing certain towns or cities or peoples, in spite of the fact that God had told them in the first part of Deuteronomy and other places, like, wipe them out completely. And finally, sometimes they didn't clear people out because, well, ultimately they just benefited from it. You know, there were treaties that were made with people where God said you shouldn't make treaties with them. There were a lot of things that people did that, well, God frowned upon because he told them not to do it. Judges chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. As for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of the land. You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed me. What is this that you have done? Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. When the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people lifted up their voice and wept. And so here the people are, I mean, they're upset because things didn't work out how they wanted it to, but they didn't work out how they wanted it to because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. They were either afraid or they were lazy or they wanted to benefit from the people. At the end of chapter 1, it talks about slave labor and that some people they left in the land, but they paid them tribute or they were just their slaves. And so they thought, hey, this is good. That's kind of like Samuel, isn't it? Samuel talking to Saul, it's like, why'd you spare the king and all this other stuff? Well, we kept the best of it. But in that regard, look, there are people that had great difficulties in conquering the land. But let me tell you about Caleb. Turn back to Joshua chapter 14 and notice this different spirit that he had that God was praising him for. The kind of spirit that we want to talk about tonight and make a few points as we think through the lesson. Joshua chapter 14, it says, now these are the territories which the sons of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the household of the tribes of the sons of Israel apportioned to them for an inheritance. By the lot of their inheritance, as the Lord commanded, through Moses, for the nine tribes and the half-tribe, for Moses had given the inheritance of the two tribes and the half-tribe beyond the Jordan, but he did not give an inheritance to the Levites among them. For the sons of Joseph were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they did not give a portion of the Levites, to the Levites in the land, except cities to live in with their pasture lands for their livestock and for their property. Thus the sons of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded Moses, and they divided the land. Now down at the end of verse 15, it'll say that the land had rest from war. So I want you to picture the situation before we dive into the text in verse 6. The situation is they've really done the bulk of the conquering. Conceptually, they've been in, they fought, they follow these battles, and everybody's kind of going back and getting their inheritance and finding some rest. And here this man, Caleb, is coming to Joshua at Gilgal, where they've kind of gone back near where they entered the land. And it says, the sons of Judah, drew near to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, you know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear, but I followed the Lord my God fully. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot is trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Now behold, the Lord has let me live, just as he spoke, these 45 years from the time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness, and now behold, I am 85 years old today. I'm still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now for war and for going out and coming in. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. So Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day, because he followed the Lord God of Israel fully." Look, Caleb, unlike Israel, who were looking for opportunities and weaknesses to where they didn't have to really take over the land, here when the land is resting from war and everybody's going back to their town, Caleb's like, "All right, it's time. Time for what? Let's go find Joshua. It's time for me to take my mountain." Like, "What? No, man, let's go relax. Let's go sit back. No, I got work to do." And so he goes and approaches Joshua and he says, "Look, you remember what God said a long time ago. He said, because of our spirit, Moses promised me," and you go read a little bit more about it, Deuteronomy chapter 1. He tells him, "Wherever your foot trods, I'm going to give that to you. Wherever you go over there, that's going to be yours. Your land is going to be an inheritance for you and your family. You go take that." And he said, "You know what? I've come today to fulfill that promise. God let me live. God kept me alive. And I'm ready to take this mountain." What an amazing thing and an amazing character. Now, let's talk about three things that we can learn from Caleb tonight as we reflect on who this guy was and what we can learn from him. Number one, Caleb represents to me, he's a man of courage. All right, Caleb's a man of courage. Now, we saw that early on in chapter 14 in verse 7 when, if you reflect on it, you remember how Caleb and Joshua, after the people were crying and weeping, and Moses and Aaron are falling on their face before the people, they're scared to enter the land. Guess who speaks up? Joshua and Caleb. Joshua and Caleb speak up. Back in Numbers 14, they are the ones that are saying all this to the people. It's not Moses. It's not Aaron. They're not saying all those things trying to persuade the people. No, it's Joshua and Caleb. And Caleb reflects on that in Joshua 14 and verse 7 when he says, "Look, I was 40 years old. I brought back word to him as it was in my heart." As it was in my heart. What does he mean by that phrase? Now you think about it for a minute. What is he trying to convey by saying, "I brought back word as it was in my heart"? Well, I think when you think about what he's trying to convey, you realize it was very difficult. He was someone that from a character standpoint was not going to say what he thinks other people want to hear. Now listen to me when I'm saying this. When you're coming back and these 10 guys are with you and they're kind of talking about how scared they are and everything, it's very easy for you to say, yeah, let's just go along with them. I guess the rest of you guys are right. And when the crowd is yelling at you and these people are intimidated and they're crying too, it's very easy for you to tell them, yeah, you're probably right. It's a dangerous thing and we should figure out what we're going to do from here and let's go somewhere else and live. Maybe we can live here. That's the easy thing. What is difficult is what Caleb did, and he said, "Look, I went and spied out the land, I came back, and I just told him what was in my heart. I told him we could take it. I told him we could do it. I told him that, and God recognized that. He was true to himself." Man, if I could give you something that Caleb had, this is the number one thing I would give you. Just be convicted enough in what is right to do it. And to do it regardless of what everybody else is doing, regardless of outside influences, regardless of what anybody else is telling you, you just do what's right. You can convince yourself enough that all that matters is your relationship to God. You can take on anybody. But too many people are intimidated by the words of other people. And we saw them doing that in Numbers chapter 4. The great thing is that when you stand up for God, guess what God's going to do? He's going to stand up for you. God's going to stand up for you. You know what happened to those 10 spies? Guess. They died. They died before the Lord. You can go read at the end of chapter 14. Those spies, yeah, they didn't wander around for 40 more years until they finally died. No, they just died. Now here they are worrying about dying, and what happens to them? Well, they died. They died anyway. And here they're afraid that everybody else, they're picking up stones, literally, to kill Caleb. And so Caleb's probably thinking to himself, well, this is the end. No, I ain't going to worry about dying in the land. Maybe we're just going to die at the hands of these people. Moses and Aaron trying to restrain him, but God comes down and stops that stuff. Instead of Caleb dying at the hand of the people, here Caleb is 45 years later, he's 85 years old, and he's the lone person standing there. Why is that? Because he is able to stand up for what is right. He said what was in his heart. All right, he held on to that. He was true to that. He was true to himself, and he was true to God. And God took him the distance, all right, when everybody else was afraid and doing the wrong thing. Caleb, to me, represented the fact that he was a man of courage. Secondly, not only was Caleb a man of courage, Caleb was a man of strength. Caleb was a man of strength. Bible stuff is a tad bit weird because, you know, you think of people as being like you and I, but then you read about people living 900 years, and then you realize they're not like you. And, you know, these kind of stories where they're in between, it's like the post-flood, people are still living longer, but they're not living, you know, as long as they used to. You know, you kind of see it taper off from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Well, here, you know, Joshua's talking about his strength, and he's advanced in age. And he's 85 years old, and so in order for you to really be impressed with that, you kind of have to appreciate that an 85-year-old, while they're younger then than they were today, he still was an older man. I mean, he's reflecting on this fact that there was something that happened that enabled him to have strength that was a tad bit unusual. You know, I don't care who you are, but when you go from 40 to 85, and to say like Joshua said, and you go back and read verse 10, you know, I'm not any weaker than I was that day. I've still got my strength, still got my ability, both for getting up, getting out of bed, and going places, he said, but also for making war. Like, I am still able to do all this stuff that I did before. Now, how is he able to do that? He must have ate right, didn't he? CrossFit with Ryan and Todd. That's what they're probably doing. No, that's not it at all. You know, you look at how God handled Israel, and if they had faith in him, he's like, you know what? Your shoes won't even wear out. You follow me fully, all those diseases and plagues that you're worried about, I'll protect you from that. But you turn on me, you worship other gods and follow them, then all the plagues written in this book, they're going to be given to you. All the things that I'm doing to other nations, those are going to come to you. And what a fearful thing. I remember Amos writing, saying, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. That's not in a good way. You don't want to meet the bad side of God. You want to meet the good side of God. The good side of God that preserves and gives strength to his people. Now, do you think that's just something that God has promised to people like Caleb? Or that he blessed people like Caleb with? Look, there's strength still today for God to provide. You got to understand that. Ephesians chapter 6, he says finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. Brethren, I'll submit to you tonight that what made Caleb strong was the strength that God provided. All right, it wasn't just chance. It wasn't just good genes. All right, it's following God and doing what God wants you to do enables you to accomplish what God needs done. And when you and I tap into that strength and to pray for strength and to put on the armor of God, then we can fulfill the scripture that says, I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. I'll be able to accomplish these great things. And people will be like, how is he able to do that? How is he able to deal with those problems? If it was me, I wouldn't be able to do with that. Well, look, if it was me, I wouldn't be able to do it either. But through God, you and I can accomplish these amazing things. And as you read him talk through this, back in Joshua 14, it's not that he's just saying, look, I'm 85 years old, but I still got it. I'm just as strong as I was today. He says, look, verse 12, perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. So he's not even thinking, yeah, I'm going to go out and prove myself a man. He's still relying on God, and he knows, look, I'm not going to do anything without God. You know, that's important for us to remember. You know, God really gave them the land, and it just blew their mind when they would run up against obstacles because, well, if God gave you something, does that mean I'm involved at all in that process? Man, what a religious problem people deal with today. Where they have that same mindset that, oh, we're saved through the grace of God. And that it's some kind of affront to God if I have to go out and take it. Well, brethren, that's no different than the Old Testament, where God provided the land of Canaan for Israel. But then like Caleb, it's like, I'm going to man up and go get it. Now, you're not going to go get it alone. Does that mean Caleb is owed the land? No, God still gave it to them. A free gift of God. But yet, what was required? Well, they had to go drive out the enemy. It doesn't diminish God's gift. It doesn't mean Caleb earned anything. It means that God set the precedent and the boundaries of his grace, and they faithfully followed that. And when they followed it, what happened? God's grace and blessing came to pass. And if only Israel had, the rest of them had learned that. You still got to go out and take it. But thankfully, God had given it to him. Now, here's the flip side of that. Can you go take anything God hasn't given you? No. You know, if you go back and read Numbers 14, what happened? After the children of Israel heard all this stuff and that they were going to be cast out and they're not going to go to Canaan and they're all going to die and their children are going to inherit it, what do? All right, now let's go take it. And so they did. Unfortunately, after hearing the pleading of everyone saying, well, God's not with you, don't go do it, they went and tried and failed. Look, man can't go take something that God's not going to give him. Anything that we receive that God allows us to get is from him. He received the honor and glory for Canaan. He receives the honor and glory for our salvation, regardless of our role that we play in receiving it. So it's no affront to God for our involvement. Caleb was a great man of strength. But third and finally, not only was Caleb a man of strength, Caleb was such a man of zeal. You think about what he said in verse 12. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that Anakim were there with great fortified cities. You remember the Anak? I don't know how you pronounce it. But from that standpoint, these were giants, all right? These were the giants. You think of Goliath of Gath. These are people that were large in size and very intimidating. And so Caleb, I mean, you think he'd be afraid. He was like, no. This is the land I want to take over. This is where I want my inheritance. Joshua, I want your blessing that I can go up and take this mountain. You give it to me. Now you think about that. I'm sure I could find quite a comfortable spot in Canaan that didn't involve giants or fortified cities or a lot of trouble. Why don't we just go stay with our relatives? Why don't we go back over to one of these places that are already settled? You know, I could very easily see myself, you know, being like those people that are like, there's iron chariots down here. We'll just stay up here. But that's not his spirit at all. He found a place he wanted. He knew God had given it to him. He knew he was still strong enough to go do it. And so he went to Joshua and said, you give me this mountain. Now, what lessons can we learn from a zeal like that? There are a ton of things that you think about just on application to you and I. I mean, are you somebody that welcomes challenges or do you run from them? You know, that's a man right there. There are people that are going to be like David and they're going to go out and face Goliath. And there are people that are going to be on the rest of the line saying, I sure hate that Goliath guy. Look, God needs people that are going to get involved, get their hands dirty, get to work, and make things happen. Instead of sitting back and complaining about the way things are, Caleb's somebody that he's zealous for God, and he's going to go out and get it done. Are you somebody that fights for the kingdom, or you just complain about the kingdom? You somebody willing to make changes happen in the kingdom in order to please God and further the borders of the kingdom? You're willing to encourage people, or just talk about how bad it is that nobody else is encouraging everybody? What kind of person would Caleb be? Caleb's the kind of person, he's like, I'm going to go up and take this thing. 85 years old, he wasn't worried about it. Are you somebody that's going to wage war against sin? Well, I'll say this, there's nothing harder than taking something that you like a whole lot that is completely wrong and giving that up for God. Maybe it's a relationship you shouldn't be in. Maybe it's some kind of sexual immorality. Maybe it's some kind of drugs or alcohol or something. Maybe whatever it is, you got to give it up. That's a war you got to wage. And not an easy one. And anybody that's dealt with that can tell you it's not something you're going to beat once and not have to deal with it. You're going to be like Caleb. You're going to be fighting for God your whole life. But here he was toward the end of his life, and he's like, you give me this mountain. I'm going to go up and take it. I'm going to wage war against it. Oh, you know Caleb took it, right? There's no doubt. It said later on in chapter 15, you know, there are three kings there, three Anak. He went and pounded them. He was willing to do that. And look, that's what we can do. We can overcome those things if we have the zeal and desire to want to do it. Do you pray to God with zeal? I mean, are you somebody that prays in faith? The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much? Or you just imagine that time and chance is happening to everybody and there's no real reason to pray? Or are you somebody like Caleb that's like, look, God's going to be with me to get this done. I'm going to go out and make this happen. I mean, we need people more like him. And the sad reality is, it's not that we just want to be like Caleb so I can be somebody and people can talk about me. It's verses like this that scare me, where Jesus talks about this fact that many are called, but few are chosen. Now you think about all those people on the doorstep of Canaan that didn't make it in. And then you think about the two men that did. Who were they? Well, they're Joshua and Caleb. Everybody else that had that moment of weakness died. Now, who do you want to be like? On that day of judgment, when you're waiting to enter into that promised land, that Sabbath rest for God's people, do you think you're going to be able to go through those gates? That narrow way? That straight gate? Few people that are finding it, living like the rest of Israel? You're not going to do it. You're not going to build a golden calf, sit around and dance and play, and then expect to be treated like Moses. I mean, you're not gonna be lazy and live for yourself and then expect God to treat you like Caleb. It's not gonna happen. He wrote these things so that we can see what it really is like to be a follower of God, to follow Him fully. And if we're not gonna live up to this, I'd be afraid to meet God. These things are serious. That's why we're here tonight. These things are important for you and I to think about and learn from and to say, this is the kind of person that pleases God. This is the kind of person that God calls out by name. This is a man that's going to find entrance into the kingdom of God. Not because of his greatness, but because he trusted in God fully. And you can do that tonight. I'm not asking you to do some great thing. I'm not asking you to do something that you're incapable of. What I'm asking for you to do is, do you believe in God? Now, if you do believe in God, then there's a couple things you need to do. I mean, if you believe the words that God has spoken, then you know you're in trouble, and you know your relationship with Him is not where it needs to be. You know it's separated. All right, there's no gray area where most people think they are, where it's like, I'm not the best, I'm not the worst. No, you're either a sinner or you're saved. And if you're not saved, then you're in that other place where you're there with the murderers and the liars and the fornicators and the adulterers. It's you with them. But you can change that through faithfully following God tonight. You can be on God's team. You can be right there at the doorstep of Canaan, and He's going to say, I'm going to supply an abundant entrance fully into that heavenly home. If you're willing tonight to come and acknowledge God and confess Him, you think Caleb would confess God? You think Caleb would stand up here and say, yeah, I'm going to follow God? You think Caleb was intimidated by the fact that I'm going to have to get up in front of a bunch of people and get baptized? You think Caleb would be intimidated by that? Caleb would say, no, give me this right now. Let me do this tonight, today, for God. That's the kind of man Caleb was. If you want to follow God, you be like him, and you come forward tonight while we stand and sing a song to encourage.